All right. Well, good day to you all. This is Dr. Paul White, co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, and glad to welcome you to this podcast on making work relationships work and how to apply the five languages of appreciation in the workplace. I'm pleased today to have Karen Alber with me. Karen, you and I have been getting to know each other for the past couple of years and the leadership resources you're providing through your firm called Integraship. But prior to that, you were the CIO of MillerCoors and then the Heinz Corporation. And in that role, you began to use the five languages of appreciation with your staff. And I'd love to hear some stories or your experiences with the languages of appreciation, how you found out about it and how they worked for you.
Well, wonderful. And first of all, thanks. I have really greatly come to appreciate the relationship, Paul, and certainly the five languages, as you're aware, has made a difference for me as a leader. So happy to share. But in general, kind of how I came about it was familiar, obviously, with the piece of work of the five languages of love and kind of kept an eye on that piece of work. Mm-hmm. And then when the five languages of appreciation came out, was a big fan of reading that and just learning about it myself. And then when I had an opportunity within the workplace to make a difference for a department that I was leading, decided to take that on as kind of an overall theme. And we can talk about that in a little bit, but I use it as a theme for kind of my whole department, and with just some tremendous results, mostly of people getting to know how to speak to either coworkers or their employees or my leaders talking to their employees in the right language, yeah. Right? So I've really come to continue to utilize the work, and many people around me have.
Yeah, that's been cool to watch from my perspective. Tell me, when you first started out, just because people may be listening and wonder, you know, how do you even get started with this? How did that early start go for you? I mean, how did you approach that initially?
You mean with my department?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I started with obviously myself, mm-hmm. and I took the assessment and got more familiar myself. And then I also then started with just my core team, mm-hmm. so 7-8 direct reports, and we all read the information and took the assessment ourselves. And what I was looking to do and what worked out for me, Paul, and it may be different, but I would recommend for people, is we used it as kind of the theme for that particular year. So each year we kind of took on, as a leadership team, something that we wanted to make a difference with our team, mm-hmm. right? And and so for that particular year, we were working on engagement, so that helped as a piece of our engagement plan. And then to be incredibly honest, we had a recognition program.
Sure.
And I found that the recognition program was fairly standard, fairly kind of cookie cutter, and I didn't really think that it was making a difference for people feeling better about their work,
right?
So then once we bought appreciation as a leadership team, that was when then we decided to roll it out across the entire department. And quite frankly, we did it pretty simply. We did, first of all, we had all taken the assessment. We understood each other's languages. I exercised it a little bit with my group for a few months so that we understood it and how to work it. And then we rolled it out across the department, and we provided the book for everybody, mm-hmm. and provided the assessment. And then we had our own leaders, so we did a little bit of a training with our own leaders so that then they could manage it within their groups.
Right.
So I didn't manage it for myself. I had my leaders manage it, and they used it as a tool within their teams.
Yeah.
So it kind of became a common language. It kind of became a little bit of a hallway language.
Yeah, yeah. And just for those that are listening that may not be aware, so the book, The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, that Dr. Chapman and I wrote, we also created an online assessment. It's called the Motivating by Appreciation Inventory. And a code comes with the book to be able to take that, but you can also just purchase codes for your team. There's some people that just aren't going to read the book, and that's fine. And the resources are at our website, appreciationatwork.com. It's the word at, not appreciationatwork.com, but we call it the MBA inventory because it's a mouthful otherwise. And it identifies a person's primary language of appreciation, their secondary language, as well as their least valued language, and we can talk about that. But over time, we learned that just knowing the language wasn't sufficient. So we added a section where once we identify a person's primary language, let's say it's words of affirmation or quality time, it takes them back through and lets them choose specific actions within that language and from whom they want those. So we try to really make it specific so people don't have to guess and waste time and energy doing things that aren't effective. So Karen, as you've been a corporate leader and actually training other leaders, you've obviously seen and worked with a lot of different helpful and valuable leadership training materials. How do you see the appreciation at work resources that we've developed being the same or different from other training resources? And do they conflict with one another? Are they, you know, sort of complement one another? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think it's a great question because obviously the organizations that you listed I worked at had really good training organizations, right, Paul, and very planned out and coordinated learning and development. But I still found that the languages of appreciation was a great augment to that.
Mm-hmm.
And really for one main reason, most corporate training programs, and I'm not discounting any of them, but most of them focus on a little bit more of the surface level or the result part or the work part as far as how they're training and talking about either leadership or people interactions or grouping people into types of personalities. So they're all really, really good. What I found that was different about the languages was that it required me to know the person.
Hmm.
So it took it one level deeper or maybe a couple, right? Mm-hmm. That I didn't need to just know that Tom liked to be appreciated or needed to hear it. It required me to know a little bit more about Tom,
right?
Whether it was his personal life or what made him tick or things that motivated him, and all of us are very different.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that was the differentiator. That was also the differentiator for me between recognition and appreciation. Because recognition, I can say, hey, Paul, thank you for finishing that project. Really appreciate it.
Right.
In using the languages, I would probably say, hey, Paul, thank you for finishing that project on Monday. I realize that your son had a baseball tournament over the weekend, and it took some extra time, but it really made a difference to get our sales force ready for this week's meeting.
Yeah. It's really exciting for me to hear you delineate that difference, because for us, that really is a core issue, that recognition for performance is a good thing when it's designed well and implemented regularly. That's one of the issues sometimes. But it's largely about performance, and that's fine. And we want people to do the right thing and do it well and even improve. But our focus really is about not only performance, but about the person, that people have value, that our employees are not just work units or production units. Yeah, we need them to get things done. That's what work is about. But we're people as well, and we feel like being able to focus on those aspects that make us people, whether it's our sense of humor or what's going on in our lives, really deepens the relationship, and also has, I think, a deeper kind of impact as well.
Right. Yeah, I think you and I have talked about the example of like these recognition programs where you might bring a team up on stage and say thank you, and for some people, that works really, really well, and that makes them tick. And Paul, some other people, that is mortifying,
right?
Please don't bring me up on stage, right? It's just not in any way helpful for them.
Right. When I speak or do training, I always ask, every time I ask people, how many of you, by show of hands, would really prefer not to go up in front of a large group to be recognized or given attention? And it varies from group to group, but about 40% on average don't want to. Earlier this week, I was with a group, it was like 90%. I mean, and the HR manager took some notes because it just doesn't work for a lot of people. In fact, I had one woman tell me, she said, yeah, I actually got Employee of the Year and it's a big deal. She said, but I spent the 15 to 20 minutes prior to getting the award in the bathroom throwing up. And
oh,
it was
great.
Hugely anxiety provoking for her. And so it might have done something from a PR point of view for the company, but it really wasn't a positive experience for her.
Right.
So I'd be interested because, you know, we do work with companies that have used all different kinds of personality types. And we actually done some research recently with the DISC and then with the Myers-Briggs. And we're looking at strength finders and so forth. How do you see the personality stuff and the languages of appreciation going together or working together? Do you have any sense about that?
I think almost regardless of which one, I would still marry utilizing the languages with it. We utilized one called Emergenetics, which would be fairly similar, where you kind of understood what was somebody's preference and their style, et cetera. We did use those in partnership with our languages work.
Mm-hmm.
What did help with our languages work was still, once again, what examples and what tactics can I use then with that particular employee on the appreciation side, right? So I still may know that they are a quantitative, focused on discipline and structure type person. That might be kind of their personality type, right? That still is probably not going to help me with, boy, they worked 80 hours last week to get something done. What's the best way to make sure that they are appreciated, right? So I used it kind of making sure that we were on the mark with certain. I'll give you an example. I had one employee that when we had done his languages work, I would have never guessed it, but his preferred language was quality time. And again, so quality time, you might think, oh boy, that means just like suck up time with the manager, right? That's what kind of people would think, right? So in this case, I had to do a little work, right? I had to get a little creative, like, okay, what would that mean? Because he was a very, very talented leader. And So it turns out that when we had a volunteer event coming up, I asked him to participate in that volunteer event with me. And what that provided, what he was looking for wasn't, quote unquote, suck up time. It was more about time to learn and have more of a casual conversation that wasn't very business-like. And
right.
So in many cases, people have that side of them as a person. It's very different. It's not monetarily driven, et cetera. So I thought they work in tandem, knowing a little bit about the personality type, but also still, you still have to know what's going to make them tick.
Right.
And what are they excited about that's going to work for them?
Yeah, and we found the same thing, that take any of the personality style inventories, that in our research, we actually found that from a construct point of view, they're totally independent, meaning that you can't predict somebody's Myers-Briggs personality type from their language of appreciation or vice versa. But the way that they work together is like for the DISC, which as like D is dominant, sort of your
right.
out front leader, it gives us clues for what they like to be shown appreciation. So a D likes to be, you know, appreciated for taking the lead and making decisions and maybe even taking risks. A C is a more conservative, detail-oriented person, and they like to be appreciated for making sure the report is correct with no errors and all that. But you then have to know how to show the appreciation to them, and that's what our material does.
Right. Right.
And just like you said about the quality time, one of the things that we learned is that, especially at quality times, probably the main example, is that it differs significantly. You can know somebody wants quality time, and some people do want individual time with their supervisor and manager and to learn and maybe even share some observations. But there are a number of people, especially younger employees, that relationship is less and less important, and they want to hang out with their colleagues, and they want to
right.
go to lunch or go out afterwards. And so the results from the inventory give you specifics, not only the language, but the specific action, so you don't have to guess, right, and try to figure it out.
Right. And like even like in the Myers-Briggs, like I would be considered like an E, right, an extrovert. But that still for me doesn't necessarily translate into that I want everything in big group. Like words
right.
mean a lot to me. So I really like to see in an email and appreciate. So again, and that's an E, an extrovert, you would think everything's got to be public in big groups, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't think always you can glean just because you understand the group of the personality. It still has to get down to the person.
Mm-hmm. So when you used and continue to use the five languages of appreciation and the different resources that we put together, how is applying them the same or different than other training materials? And you've mentioned to me they really make a significant difference. Tell me why you think that might be.
Well, first of all, one of the things that we were working on engagement. So one of the key components of our engagement is really getting at the people part. You and I have kind of talked about this, but I have this big and growing continued passion on the role that people skills play in the workplace, right? And again, many of the bigger training programs may get at the very overall part of that, but getting down to that individual part on the people skills. So I'll tell you one of the things that we did to really, really apply it in our department is we modified our recognition program as a result of using the languages. So once the whole team had been through the languages work, instead of having we had an employee recognition program by our department where you could volunteer people that you thought did a great thing innovative-wise or extra time. And we modified that so that it had all components that people could basically have a choice then of if they won an award, instead of just getting the little trophy on stage or getting a lunch with
right.
whatever, we gave a menu.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, we tried to make sure that menu worked for numerous languages,
right?
Right? So
right.
now I felt like over the course of a few years, and I'm not saying that it's just the languages, but certainly it helped.
Sure.
Our engagement went up year to year in the organization because I think people started to feel that they mattered as individuals, just not mattered as what they were hearing at their performance review.
Right.
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 We typically jump to that. We assume, okay, at the annual review time, gave them a great review, gave them a good raise. People should be happy. I'm going to tell you, that ain't always going to do the trick.
Absolutely.
Right? It's not always money, and it's not always about performance.
Right. Yeah. Both points are absolutely right on. And our book came out in 2011, and it's become a bestseller. We sold 350,000 copies now, and we recently revised it, and it came out in January of 19 with new research from all over the place, from Gallup and Towers Perrin and Boston Consulting Group and all of those. And a couple of key points. One is that money is not a good motivator for very long. If you get a raise, it feels good for a while, but if everything else stays the same, as far as relationships and whether you're giving input and that kind of stuff, it goes away pretty quickly. So, and most managers think that people leave a job to earn more money. And actually, one study showed that only 18% of the people say they're leaving for more money. That more often, another related study showed that 79% of the people that leave a job voluntarily cite a lack of appreciation was the main reasons for leaving. And so it can feel like a soft skill, but it really has hard implications for the functioning of the business as far as turnover and morale and so forth.
I completely agree, Paul. As part of our work, we talk to senior leaders all the time that we are looking to help build other leaders. And we've had leader after leader tell us that, boy, if they had it to do over again, they would have focused more and more time on the soft skills part and mm-hmm. the people part, because we tend to assume that if we're good at our technical skills, then we're ready for the next part of leadership, right? Or we're ready to. And to any emerging leader or rising leader I coach or that we come across or that your group talks to, I would highly recommend this piece of work can actually be kind of like almost your little secret weapon. Mm. It's almost like a secret sauce because it is so impactful to have your people feel as if they matter. And that's really hard to do as a leader because right. you have to make hard decisions and you're going to not always have good news to share and you have to talk to people about performance. But boy, if you can do all of that and at the same time be showing people that you care and that you understand that they're humans and that, and again, because this work requires that, it is making you think about them as a person.
Mm-hmm.
It goes a really long way, right?
Yeah.
So I thought it was just a fabulous tool. And by the way, you can actually even do it and not have it felt like it's so orchestrated, right?
Right?
Because if you get to really know your employees' languages and what makes them tick, hopefully you could just be doing this in the way you day-to-day go about your business with
Absolutely.
People.
And yeah, and that's one of the reasons that we continue to be successful and people refer us to other companies or leaders is because, one, it's not difficult to understand. Although I'm a psychologist and I like complex things sometimes, this is pretty simplistic. And you can remember the five languages easily, and we create visual symbols to help with that. And it's easy to apply. I mean, one of the things we know is people are busy and they have a lot to do. And so I tell people we train, I'm not here to create another to-do list for you. You've already got two. You got a regular one and then sort of maybe your secondary project one, and you don't need a recognition or appreciation one. And so
right.
we've worked really hard to help make it easy to implement that sort of what you're already doing or almost doing and tweak it just a tad and make it personal and individual. And that's right on the mark. And I want to go back to your comment about that it's about the person and not just performance. I think that is a key difference that we try to emphasize that, yeah, we want people to do the right thing and perform well, but performance-based recognition programs, when implemented well, can impact that. But one of the things that's been found is that it tends to only affect about the top 10 or 15% of your workforce, and it's sort of the same people time after time. And then, so you've got this big middle group of good people, solid workers, working hard, doing their best. And if they don't get into that top tier, they don't hear anything lots of times. And that then puts them at risk for leaving. And so we want to fill in the gaps with helping the middle group. And it's not always about performance. And sometimes it's about who they are, because there are times we all have areas to grow in. And you're like, well, how do I show appreciation when they're really not doing this right? Well, you can focus on something else. Personally, and I think this is true for you too, Karen, I like to work with cheerful people more than grumpy people.
Exactly.
You know, and I remember a team member that she just had the delightful laugh. I just love to hear her laugh. And it's just like, man, Kim, you just light up the room when you laugh. And it wasn't about performance, but it was about her. And so we can say, share appreciation or value things that are just about the person that's not related to performance.
Right. And you know what's interesting, Paul, as a leader, of course, we all have our bad days, and we certainly have one of the most rewarding things as a leader is to be able to recognize somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And say
mm-hmm.
And that's actually a neat thing and it feels good. But boy, there's nothing better in how rewarding it feels to actually appreciate somebody in a language that matters to them.
Right.
Right. And
mm-hmm.
either see the sparkle in their eye or have them come back and say, wow, my wife was so appreciative because she had no idea that you knew what I was doing when mm-hmm. I came home and said whatever, or show her the letter that you wrote or a gift that was very appropriate, right? It's really easy to go give coffee gift cards. I promise you as a leader, that's like the easiest thing that I can go get gift cards and we could. And people know that, right? People know that it takes a little more work to understand maybe that they're into movies, maybe not coffee. So if they are a gifts person, then find out a little bit more about what they're interested in, right?
Exactly.
So that you can make it tick, and then that's really rewarding.
Yeah,
right?
I have a personal story about that as well that I often share in training, is that I did some volunteer work for my church, and they wrote me a handwritten note because I'm a boomer, and, you know, boomers like handwritten notes, and they included a gift card, and it's just to Starbucks, which is fine, good, but I don't drink coffee. I don't have anything against it.
Right.
I just don't like it, and so you know, like, okay, thanks. I gave it to my daughter. I got some points that way. But a few months later, I did something else and they wrote me another note and gave me a gift card. This time it was to Dick's Sporting Goods. And I like to fish. You know, I don't know, it was 10 or 15 bucks. It wasn't much money, but it was like, hey, cool, free lures. And so just the slight tweak of knowing me and knowing what I liked really made a difference in its impact on me. And I think you're exactly right. It's about getting to know them as a person. And that's what makes people feel valued, is that we get to know them as a person and spend a little time either talking to them or investigating about it and the kinds of things they like.
Well, because here's what that told them. That told them that you were listening, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a human thing that people appreciate being listened to.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, I think that goes a long way. And I know one of my personal stories is I had a manager. I was a little bit of a words of appreciation and quality time person. And she offered, instead of a certain gift card or a gift, whatever thing that we could get, or a professional development thing that you could take a class. And some people really like to learn, right? And and that is, for some people, more rewarding than some other things. So, and I had some employees that really, really triggered to that. So I would offer something like going to a certain professional development thing that would be interested. It might not be in our core thing, or might be outside the four walls, or you would always just jump to thinking that, boy, I'm going to give them a raise, right? But boy, to tell them they could go to a 2-day seminar that was going to be about something that they were really interested in, was like literally like light bulbs going off for this person.
Right. Great idea. And I think that speaks to the issue that within each language, whether it's gifts or words or whatever, that different actions impact people differently. And so words, for example, usually we think about giving a compliment or something like that. And for introverts, about half the population are introverted, right? So for introverts to go up to a colleague and give them a compliment, that can be very intimidating, anxiety provoking. And so sometimes it's more effective and easier to implement through writing. And it doesn't always have to be handwritten. We can email or text. But you've told me of a story about how you used words to touch your team members. So tell us that story.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, completely agree on the words, right? In today's day and age, sometimes the email gets a little too easy, right? And that isn't always going to be the mark for everybody. Now, I'm not saying don't do it. I did it a lot to make sure that people acknowledge, but you do have to also include in it that you understand something about the person and that you also understand something about what it meant to you. So one of the things that I did on a little broader scale, and again, it probably hit some more than others, but I wanted to do it in an appropriate way. So this is a number of years ago. I sent holiday cards out to my entire team, which at that time was a few hundred people. So I would start early in the season and I hand wrote inside it. So I could have just done those pre-stamped ones, right? I have my name and stuck the envelope on it. But I tried. I might not have been perfect, but I tried to put a handwritten note that said, inside, hey, Paul, thanks for the work on Project X this year. Hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday, and sign my name, right? And again, did that with as many people, whatever I could think about that of either what they worked on or something that meant to them. Again, I couldn't do 5 paragraphs because I had a lot to write, but tried to do something that showed that it was personal. And it had 2 impacts. One is for the people that words really mattered, certainly with their family as well, if they'd been working a lot, it showed that it explained to their family that what they're doing was making a difference,
right?
And that they were known and that they were appreciated. And kind of in general, it kind of sent a message to the whole team as a theme, like, wow, do you know that she sent and wrote 200? You know what I mean? Like they kind of got it, like, wow, that's kind of like a caring act in itself that were appreciated.
Well,
right?
And it communicated that this was a high value to you. I mean, that you weren't just sort of saying the words in front of the group or training or whatever, but that you were trying to implement it and that you viewed this as really important, and so you were investing time and energy, which probably in some ways spoke as much, if not more, than the specific personal messages.
I think it did. Yeah, yeah. I think it did. From the feedback I kind of got back, it was kind of like the gesture was a bit, you know what I mean? It was the effort. So I guess my advice would be, don't just go through the motions if you're going to do something, right?
Exactly.
Take that added, and it didn't take me a lot of work, just take that added little bit of extra thought or time to do it right. And that's when it actually really pays off. Believe me, people will read through if you're going through the motions, or if you're doing something because you need to check the box or feel like you did it or feel like you had a recognition program. But if you do it in this way, it's really hard for people to think that it was going through the motions, because it has that personal touch.
And one of the things that we found out is that for some, and there's actually a generational and somewhat of a gender interaction effect, that for some people, a handwritten note is very meaningful. I mean, I'm a boomer and I grew up, you know, if I got a nice gift from my grandma, I was going to sit down and write a handwritten thank you note. And so that sort of sticks for us. But what we found is that for younger workers, a handwritten note, especially guys, 20-something guys, a handwritten note doesn't add a whole bunch of value for most of them. But what is important is both the personal aspect. So it's not the handwritten part. It's what you kept emphasizing, that it's personal, it's about them, and you could say something about them and either what they've done specifically or their life situation. But for younger employees, it's also the speed in which you get back to them, because if you want to really affirm them for something that they've done, that if you go past about 24, 48 hours, you sort of moved into the realm of history. If you wait till the quarterly review or annual review, I mean, you're in ancient history by that point.
Isn't that interesting? Right.
So it's really, for them, it is more important about the speed rather than the medium that you use. But again, you know, focusing on the specifics. I mean, we have about 80,000 people right now on our newsletter list, and we'll do polls occasionally. And one of the polls we did was, what don't you like to hear as far as somebody trying to show appreciation? And good job was one of the main phrases that came up. That people don't like that because it's too vague, it's too general, and it doesn't, you know, say anything about them. So we really encourage people to, when you write a note or even if you say something, use people's name. If you're writing it, make sure you spell their name right. That doesn't work well. And then be specific about what they've done that you value and appreciate. And then the third part we always encourage is, why is it important what they did? Why is it important to you or to the organization or to the clients you serve? Because lots of times we think people know that, but they really need to be sort of reminded about, okay, this is why we need you to get things done on time or, you know, ahead of time and whatever. And when you take the time to think through it, even, it shows, okay, this is real.
Yeah. And don't make the assumption that people know that. Like, don't make the assumption that people know, why are we doing that? Why are we having to do this all weekend long or on a Tuesday? Because again, organizations are big and there's a lot of people. And by the time it gets to certain levels, people may not be aware of why are we having to do this to this extent or why? So a lot of times people, again, that's just human interaction. You kind of want to know, why are you a part of something? And that is, this is part of a connection to doing, as opposed to, I'm just doing this crazy task at lightning speed on a weekend and I have no idea. Okay. And then I got a thank you on Monday that said, thank you.
Yeah. Right. And I grew up in the context of a family-owned business, and it was a manufacturing firm. And they designed and manufactured point-of-purchase displays, so like Hallmark card displays and things in caps in the grocery store. I grew up working in the factory, and I remember specifically that my dad would take us, the various employees, and see the final product. I specifically remember this Christmas tree thing that had ornaments that were displayed on it, and so that people could see how what they were doing, the part that they were gluing, or if they were cutting it or folding it, how it fit into making the final product. And it was, I think it was good vision on his part to do that. Sometimes that's difficult to do in today's workforce because of the process or the end things are not as tangible, obviously. But people need to know how what they do ties to the end. And the more we can make that clear, the better. I love the thought about not going through the motions. And that's really one of the big issues with employee recognition that people resent. It's just sort of pretty mechanical. It's coming from the top down and so forth. And I've got to think that when you were working with your team and trying to help train and implement the languages of appreciation, not everybody was on board 100% or significantly less. How did you handle that? Any resistance or people that it wasn't for them?
Yeah, it's a great question. And obviously, as with any initiative, right, you're always going to have one, either the naysayers or two, the people that aren't as on board, right? So,
yeah.
The reason we continued to plug forward and personally me as the leader to continue to kind of, you know, sponsor it and follow it was I still wanted to make sure that we were making a difference for the broader good of the organization. I also knew that if I had a few people that it didn't hit the mark, they weren't really our audience, right?
Yeah.
I was hoping that they would come along, but I certainly was not going to do it just because of a smaller group of people.
Right.
So you kind of have to keep in your mind that you're always going to have, as with anything, something that works for some and doesn't work for others. But we were looking for the whole. We were looking for the broader good of the whole. And,
right.
And I knew in general, and I'm talking really at a macro level on how leaders think, Paul, that in general, showing a workforce that you were doing an appreciation effort,
mm-hmm.
that couldn't really be a bad thing,
right?
I wasn't having an effort about working more overtime, right? We were having an effort that we cared about trying to make sure that we were appreciating people in the right way. So
yeah.
For the most part, we did have people that understood it. Yes, you're going to have people that say, oh, God, really, you want me to read a book? Or, oh, boy, really, you want me to take a survey? But that's kind of human nature. You
right.
can't really take that personally. You might not have everybody take it. I also didn't want to make it punitive
right.
because it was supposed to be a positive, kind of a neat thing,
yeah.
right, that we took on as a group. And so, again, if the leaders modeled it, that helped.
Yeah.
So because we modeled it and that they saw us making some changes. And, again, then we didn't really try to force fit it to the few that were just kind of like, okay, it
yeah.
sounds like kind of the flavor of the month or whatever.
Absolutely.
Because we knew we were making a difference for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think you were so wise in doing that, and I hope I gave you the advice to do that. I don't think I did. I think you figured that out on your own. But what we found is that there are people that aren't interested, and I just say, fine, just step to the side. I don't want people to try to fake it, because that doesn't go well.
Right.
People read through it, and it undermines the perceived authenticity for other people. So I just say, fine, just... you know, step aside, we'll do this. And what I find is that over time, as they see both the authenticity focus versus just sort of going through the motions and helping it become personal, that people over time become on board. So we don't go in and try to just do a top-down implementation, because when you mandate it, then that undermines the perceived genuineness as well. And
right.
so it's sort of start small and then go from there. And that seems to work well.
And part of it is because there are a lot of initiatives of the month,
yes.
or flavors of the month. Most organizations have that. So the more you can try to make this more of a natural, I like to use the words the way we work around here,
uh-huh.
right? That you could just kind of get it into the way we work,
yeah.
not, hey, this month's initiative or this year's initiative is this.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted it to be how my leaders started to think and how they started to consider people and then how people started to consider their coworkers. We tried to make it a little bit more of a cultural evolution in education than an initiative of the month.
Right.
The year,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And I was going to go that way because you hear so much about culture now, work culture and workplace culture. And people say, well, how do you change your culture? And it's really not that hard to understand, but people make it difficult because a lot of times people view culture as external to them. And that, you know, it happens to you, whereas culture really is the aggregate of hundreds, if not thousands, of interactions between individuals and how those happen and where those happen and the words that are used. That starts to affect culture. We find that, again, if you start small, give people tools, the same language, like you mentioned, that you use a term so that if somebody says, my language is acts of service, what does that mean? So you facilitate that. And then also culture involves both structure, that there are things that you do regularly, and then it's also spontaneity, that it's not just structure, because that feels very lifeless. And so we've had teams create different creative aspects of it, of T-shirts or signage or different games actually around it and so forth. And the thing that I want to continue to move into is culture also involves visual symbols, which we provide, but also music and food. And sort of having celebrations about different kinds of things. And when you do that, it takes time. You give people the tools and sort of structure that it can work. all of us have areas that either appreciation that just don't mean much to us, or that's just tougher to communicate. And I wonder what you found out for yourself about, is there a certain language that's tough for you to communicate to others that that's their language of appreciation?
Well, it's an interesting question. I don't know if tougher, so I'm not going to say that there was one that was harder than the other. I would say that the tougher part is kind of the gist of what you and I have been discussing, which is the difference of the first thing that comes to mind, like let's say words. The first thing that comes to mind is to say thank you to somebody.
Right.
Right. So people say, okay, check, got it, Karen. I don't know what this big deal is. I do that all the time.
Right.
So when I would say, boy, difficult to explain, which is why now I do recommend that people actually read the book and understand the assessment, is because it's that next level.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
To try to teach people, no, I get it. You've sent 25 thank you emails. I got it. But so I think that the harder part is to get leaders to understand we're talking another level to these languages that take some work.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, like I said, I used it as one of my tools. I value people skills. I got more successful because of the people skills part of my role, Paul, not
mm-hmm.
just the technical part of my role.
Yeah.
So I valued, and this became one of those neat ways that I felt differentiated myself as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a million different ways you can kind of be, you know, what do you want to be known for? This can be one of those, but it does take learning how to explain the use of the languages past what the first description means,
yeah.
which is why you guys do a great job of then giving some really concrete examples, because hopefully once people read those examples, it's different than, well, yeah, I get words of appreciation. I say thank you a lot. I sent so-and-so,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'll give you a personal one. I did a speaking thing a week or so ago, and I got some emails back saying thank you. Well, one person's email said to me specifically, boy, I learned more in that hour and a half than I have in 7.5 years of
wow.
my job at work,
yeah.
and here's why.
Cool.
Now, that email to me was specific.
Right, yeah.
She didn't just say, boy, thank you for speaking. So
yeah.
that I think is really important. And maybe a little bit harder to bring people along to explain, and maybe that's what you experienced, Paul, and why you guys do the work you do,
mm-hmm.
is to make sure that you're explaining it past that first level.
Yeah, and I think you obviously over your career have been committed to helping other people learn how to lead. And one of the key lessons I try to share with people is, especially developing leaders, is if you're going to learn how to lead well, you have to learn how to lead people who are different than you. And that includes a lot of different things, personality and skills and all that, but it includes feeling appreciated and valued. And otherwise, I say, you know, you have a bunch of little mini-yous following you around. You may be great and talented, but, you know, to have a successful team, you have to have different skill sets, personality, motivation. And that, I think, a key skill, life skill, really, that we're falling down on in our culture is what psychologists call perspective taking ability, being able to see the situation from another person's point of view. And to be honest, sometimes some of the quote unquote most successful hard driving leaders I find lack this skill. I'll give you an example. I work sometimes with high performing financial advisors and those kind of guys. Usually guys, we talk about some people not liking to go up in front of a group. They're like, where's the TV and the cameras? Bring it on. You know, I mean, they like that kind of thing, but they think other people like that too. So when they create some kind of celebration for their team, it includes everybody's got to go up front. Well, we've learned that administrative assistants, it's about 60 to 70% of them don't want to go up front.
Right.
And yet they're feeling forced by their boss to have to do this because he or she doesn't get it, that not everybody feels appreciated in the same way that they do. And it's, I think, an ongoing challenge to help people see that, yeah, you maybe don't get it. And it's like, I don't get spending time, why that's valuable to another person. In fact, one activity that we take team members through, just did it yesterday with the team, is getting together and sharing their language and the actions important to them, but also the why. What about that action makes you feel valued? And it's really a fascinating activity because it takes people lots of times back to their childhood or something in their life that when somebody took time to sit down and listen, it could be your grandma or your first boss or whatever. And it's just fascinating to hear the why behind it versus just what the action is.
Right.
So as you think about and have experienced trying to help convince, really, in some ways, leaders about the value of appreciation and learning how to do that, when you hear excuses, besides we pay them and that's our appreciation, but
one of my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. How do you try to help convince people about that? Or do you just let it go and they sort of got to learn over life? Or what do you hear and how do you try to respond to them about it?
It's kind of a two-step in how I think about it. I'm going to answer the question as if I'm trying to convince my own leaders or another leader,
sure.
Right? A leader that I'm mentoring or coaching on why this would be a big deal. I think the first step that I think people that are wanting to lead more or wanting to bring their people along is to first recognize that the people part matters mm-hmm. as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
But you would be amazed in the business world and all the other disciplines on how we just assume that if I'm good at my craft,
right,
then people will respect me.
Right.
So because I'm a great accountant and then because I'm a great IT, that is where I get my respect and that is why people would want to follow me and that is why I should be the director. And that. So I would say the first kind of step is even before the use of is to recognize that as a leader and recognize that that can be your differentiator.
Right.
Is to realize that almost more than the technical as you move up, that if you can get the people part, mm-hmm. which is why I do it now, that's kind of, as you know, my passion is to help people with the people skills. And I'm talking people skills like empathy and resilience and communication, that those
right.
are so important as a leader, because if they don't recognize that, then they're going to have a hard time recognizing that appreciation would be important, right?
Right.
But
right.
then I'd say, okay, if you get that, and hopefully people get that, and I explain why and how many leaders succeed as a result of that, and a lot of the statistics on leaders succeeding and failing, then you say, okay, what are the tools that I can go utilize to be that people-based leader?
Right.
In addition to being the good technical leader and all those other things. And then that's where I step to then the second thing is then make sure that the people that you have around you feel appreciated. Back
mm-hmm.
to your statistic of it's one of the number one reasons people leave is their manager.
Right.
Because I do that education of what's in it for them as a leader,
mm-hmm.
that these are tools that will make them better and more successful. It's a little bit of what's in it for me.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. So, it harkens back to mentoring, at least, about influencing people. People don't really care what you know or what you can do. They want to know how you can make their life better. And so if what you know and can do does that, that's good. But just sort of, or for me, you know, I got a master's degree and a PhD. They don't give a rip about that, to be honest.
Right.
It's like, how does this impact me? And I think that's true on this whole side about the people skills, especially because more and more, and there's a lot of different reasons, but we do, especially in larger organizations, look at people as a number or a production unit or however you want to say it. And it dehumanizes them. One of the interesting pieces of research I saw is that Monster.com did a survey for people that were looking for work. And the number one characteristic that people wanted in a workplace was that they wanted to feel appreciated for the work they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
are you kidding me? You know, it's just like, wow, that's pretty powerful. And Gallup, in their research of over 1 million people worldwide, found that helping your team feel appreciated is one of the top core factors for employee engagement that we know really
right.
creates positive kinds of things. And so it's not just, hey, let's make people feel good. It's about healthy relationships and valuing people so that they are engaged and help the organization succeed.
It is, and it's so true. And I saw it play out for years and years in the workplace. But again, we're kind of groomed about our technical craft.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, because
right.
that's what we go to school for, and that's what we learn in the books. And so personally, I found that the people part was clearly what helped me move through the organization. And first of all, feel good about my leadership and have teams that felt good about it, but also ultimately to my success. And to this day, my guess is if you talk to people on my team or people that I'd worked with for years or good leaders, they're not probably going to reiterate those technical skills of those leaders.
Right, right. Absolutely.
And that can be the neat part, right? Because if you're looking for that, wow, I mean, it does feel rewarding that you've made a difference for people beyond that technical aspect of their role.
Yeah, and they're going to remember that. They're going to remember how you impacted their life personally more than some technical trick they learned from you.
Right.
So that's cool. Well, we need to wrap this up, but Karen, man, I've enjoyed this so much. I just want to thank you in front of others for your investment of time and your ongoing sharing of enthusiastic support for the five languages of appreciation. And you have been and continue to be a really vocal advocate for us, and I appreciate that. Just real briefly, tell us about the work that you're doing through Integraship and how that helps with leadership training so people can know about that and where they can find you.
Yeah, well, great. First of all, thank you, Paul, for the work that you've done and your group does, because obviously this work is making a difference. So in the spirit of words of appreciation, your work is making a difference.
Well, thanks.
And similar to kind of my comment, what I've done, having moved from my corporate roles, is quite frankly to go do this on a day-to-day basis with leaders. So the group that the work that we do at Integraship is specifically to help people with these people skills and the soft skills part of their role. And our mission is really to change the way people lead and to really make leadership about people. And they are skills. It is not necessarily just some big master training thing that you can go check a box and you did it,
right,
and you don't need it for 20 years.
Right.
The people skills that you need at each juncture of your career will differ, and they are actual skills, whether it's a listening skill or how to have hard conversation or resilience. We talk a lot about how do you have the courage as a leader? How do you build those skills? So that's what we do. The Integraship Group is we do that specific skill building. And our leaders are people like myself that actually have been in the roles to help people move to that next level of leadership. So we have e-courses that do that. And then certainly we do the one-on-one coaching. And we certainly do it for all these reasons that you and I just talked about, is because I fundamentally believe that it is the differentiator and can be the differentiator in being a leader and enhancing your career. So
yeah.
I do what I love, and I do what
that's
made
cool.
a difference for me, Paul.
Yeah.
That's what the Integraship Group work is, and it's similar to your work, which is why our partnership has been so wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's exciting. Well, I just want to wrap up and remind people that this is only one in a series of the podcast series, Making Work Relationships Work. It's part of the Chapman Center series. And our goal is to address practical ways to improve your daily work life. And if you're not sure where to find these podcasts, just go to our website, appreciationatwork.com. It's the word at appreciationatwork.com, and be able to find it there. And this is Dr. Paul White, and I hope you have a good rest of the day and hope to talk to you soon again. Thanks.